everyone. Welcome to the Crafty Garden Mom Podcast. My name is Tanisha. If you're a new listener, welcome, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for giving me a listen. And if you're a returning listener, welcome back. So I hope everyone's doing well. We are having a very good summer here. I had a week off at the beginning of July and it was fabulous. My parents watched the girls and my husband did not take the week off. So I was by myself in the house and yay, it was fabulous. If I do say so myself. I was able to get some things done around the house. I was able to focus on getting some art done, some crafting done. I sat and watched Korean dramas. I sat and watched a couple classic movies. I read a lot. It was fabulous. It was so good. I think in the future I'm going to book two of those. Although, because the girls weren't around, my husband and I both kind of thought, you know, or at least I know I thought, you know, we probably should have planned this better. We could have done, the two of us could have done something, but he takes a week off in August every year, right before our big family and friends cookout that we do at our house. And, he's also got some things going on at work right now. So it just wasn't good timing for him to take some time off, but it was great for me to take some time off. It was just fun. And what was really good is I've mentioned many times that my focus this year has been on decluttering, purging, simplifying. That's my word of the year, simplify. And I was able to spend a little time just reconnecting with that word and what it means, because I mean, half of the year is gone. I wanted to look and see where I was at. I was not happy with where I was at. You know, you kind of poop out on some of the goals that you set for yourself at the beginning of the year. So I was able to refocus on some of that, and I purged 14 full hefty, those black hefty trash bags, 14 of them, 14. I was very proud of myself, plus several boxes full of books and household knickknacks that would have broken the bag. So quite a bit of stuff. I'm sad to say, a little embarrassed to say, that there's still more that definitely needs to be purged, but I was very happy with the progress that I made and the big dent in the clutter that I needed to make. And then I was able to focus on that solidly for a week. I didn't take the entire week to do it. I would work maybe an hour or two each day on it, 30-minute segments, 15-minute segments here, you know, just, I would pick a room, basically. I picked a room that was what I was going to focus on for the day and just dug at it and dug at it and dug at it several times, and it made a difference. It's made a difference. It's funny that within a couple hours of the girls returning home, I kind of got a little discouraged again because the house looked a wreck. It's amazing how clean your house stays when you don't have kids around for a week. But which kind of told me that I still have a lot of their stuff that I need to get rid of. And just the general clutter that I have to keep on top of. So, but anyway, I was very happy overall with the dent I made in the general clutter and just stuff that we have sitting around. I've mentioned quite a few times about my just feeling a little hemmed in by it sometimes, and like it's hindering my creativity to have all this stuff around that you just, at the time when you buy it or you accept it, if somebody's giving it to you, you think, oh yeah, sure, that's great. And then you put it down and it's just adding clutter and weight to your life that I just don't need. I'm trying to simplify. So I'm happy I had the week, a full week, actually a week and a couple days, because I took off from July 2nd, which was a Thursday, through the following week. So more than just a week. So, but it was great. The girls, of course, had a fabulous time with my parents. My parents did say that when the girls went home, which I was kind of surprised when we went to pick them up, that they weren't sitting on the front steps with their suitcases ready to go. But my mom did have their bags packed in at the front door. They loved having them, but I can fully understand if you're not used to having little ones around, even if they're yours or related to you, if you're not used to it, it's a lot. It's a lot. And my parents did say that it took them almost a week to recover. But that was also because I told them they didn't pace themselves that well. I mean, they basically were running around doing stuff every single day. Mostly my dad. He's the more mobile of the two, although my dad hurt his foot quite a few months ago and it hasn't properly healed, so he's limping around. But he's the more mobile in terms of wanting to, to run around and keep up with them and doing stuff. So they went to the aquarium. They went on a pirate ship cruise that they do in the Chesapeake Bay over in Annapolis, which is near where they live. They did. They went to the Jersey Shore for a couple days during the week. They went roller skating. Yeah, they did a bunch of fun stuff. They went to the pool, of course, almost every day. They got room service in the hotel they stayed at. You know, they had a ball. And they missed us. Like, we FaceTimed several times through the week. And they missed us, particularly Maddie. I think she had a rough night of it, like, the second night. She was having a rough time. She was missing me, particularly. And, you know, we had to FaceTime for a little while and calmed down, and I called back like an hour later and she barely even wanted to talk to me because she'd moved on. She'd gotten over her extreme homesickness pretty quickly. So I wasn't at all worried about them, particularly since they were with my parents. But yeah, there was a little pang when my baby is crying, you know, and I'm close enough to go get her if I really wanted to, but I held strong because I knew she would get over it, and she did. So, what was I saying? Oh, yeah, in general, I knew they were going to have a good time. So, and they did. They were exhausted. And then, what did we do right after then? This last weekend, we went to a family reunion and not engagement party. It was more of a celebration of their marriage, of my cousins. And, but it was family getting together that we haven't gotten together in quite a few years. So, you know, kids that you saw as babies were now teenagers or, you know, middle schoolers. So it was a little bit jarring to see some of my cousins' children that I'd either just seen pictures of as babies or had seen them as a baby. And now they're, you know, almost in high school or in high school going to college. It was just a little like, oh my gosh, I'm getting so old. But what was really awesome was seeing my uncle, my aunt and uncle, who are my mom. It's my mom's brother and his wife. And my uncle, what was really amazing is because it's been at least 5 or 6 years since I've seen him face to face. He looks exactly like my Nana. Which is, of course, his mom. And of all four of them, because my mom has two brothers and one sister, of the four of them, my uncle looks exactly like my Nana, except he has a darker skin tone. And, of course, he's a man. But, I mean, it was like looking at my Nana 20 years ago. It was just very, like, it pretty much brought tears to my eyes because I haven't seen my Nana in a little while. And it was just, yeah, it was a little emotional for me because I was like, oh my gosh. So I definitely, it firmed my resolve that before the summer's over, I'm going to go see her. But it was just, it was seeing her before she got really sick, basically, before she went into the nursing home and had her stroke and all of those things. So it was a little emotional in that respect. So anyway, I don't want to get all emotional on the call, but anyway, yes, it was very good spending time with them. They have a beautiful house in North Carolina. It should have only taken us 5 or 6 hours at the most to get there, but it took us 9. And my dad was not, you know, he was a little impatient with us by the end. But I told him, you know, some traffic from that. We went down on a Friday and we ran into that Friday. The government lets out early. People head towards the beaches. Traffic around 3. And yeah, it took us a long time to get there. But then, so he's thinking, okay, we're headed home. We should make good time. Nope. Same amount of travel. It took us 9 hours. So we just decided it takes 9 hours to get down there. My dad is like, no, it doesn't. It takes 9 hours for you people to get down there. Regular people who don't have to stop every 30 minutes. It only takes 5 to 6. So Mom and I travel together just fine. We think my dad might be the issue. She and I, you know, we have no issue stopping at Cracker Barrel. If we see a flea market or like an antique shop that looks interesting, we'll hop out. Dad was having none of that. We stopped at Cracker Barrel on the way down. Going home, he refused. He was like, forget Cracker Barrel. They took too long. So yeah, we had a fun time, though. The girls were very excited to be going on a road trip, an adventure. And our minivan has a DVD player, which is a godsend on long, long road trip. It's, you know what? It's fabulous just driving around town. I'll be honest. I love that thing. I love our DVD player in the car. I don't have to hear anything from them. Unless they want something or they're hungry. Yeah, it's quiet. And so I'm able to listen to my audiobooks and enjoy my ride. Anyway, that's what's been going on for us. I did want to give a brief health update. I have on Twitter mentioned it a couple times that I've had a couple health concerns in the last couple months. And essentially, I don't want to get into a whole lot of specifics, but basically I'm fine. However, I am being monitored by a cardiologist for some issues going on with my heart. Nothing that needs right now to be corrected surgically. I'm going to be going on a specific nutritional plan. I'm able to exercise. Yeah. So there is a bit of I'm a little uncomfortable, I guess, talking specifically about this right now, but I will just say I'm fine. I am doing what I need to do to get healthy and to, hopefully take care of this issue non-surgically. And for all intents and purposes, I just recently went to NIH, which is, for those of you who aren't familiar, it's the National Institute of Health. It is the, I don't want to say be all and end all of our country's health system, but it's where it all goes through, like the research, the planning, all of that. Top doctors, top-notch doctors, they're all there. So to say that I'm getting the best of care is putting it mildly. Like, I've never been to NIH before for anything, and it was my first time going on the campus because it's a whole campus there. And wow, it's amazing. It's just amazing. The resources, the things, like, yeah. You might think that you see, like, if you watch medical shows, like even ER or Grey's Anatomy, which is what I watch, and like your familiarity with what like a CAT scan looks like. The one at NIH is like the Cadillac. It's just amazing. And I was in it. I was in one of them. They have many of them. So yeah, it's just awesome. And you can tell they have top-notch just people working, from the person who checks you in to person who check, you know, who gets you ready for any testing that you're having. They are top notch. And what's also awesome about NIH is, I mean, that's where a lot of, like any testing or blood work or stuff that you might have done that needs to be sent away, it goes through NIH. So when you get your blood work done there, it's not like days to get the results. It's minutes. It's just like sent via iPad, I guess, to the doctor in a completely different area of the campus. It's just amazing. Hopefully I don't have to go back for anything, but it was an experience just to go there just for half a day and to get the care was an experience in itself. So anyway, just wanted to give you that update that the focus is on health and wellness for me, and I will keep you updated in a couple months, I guess, to see how it's going and, you know, if there's any concerns or anything that needs to be had or prayers that I need you guys to have for me, I will let you know. Right now, I've received wonderful emails and tweets just of support, and believe me, I read them all, and I am so thankful for you and the concern and the caring that is in this community, and just from my listeners, words can't express how good it makes me feel. So I just thank you for that. But please know that I am fine. I am well. I'm taking care of myself. I am following doctor's orders, and you know, I'm good. I'm good to go. So, moving on to some works in progress and finished objects. Not a whole lot of finished objects. I thought I was going to be done with my knit socks by now, but I lost the bag. It's one of those things where you put something down, like you put it down and you think you know where you put it, or you last left it and you go to look for it and it's not there. And so for almost 2 weeks, I could not find my knitting bag with my socks in them. And it was really strange. I felt like I looked all over in all the likely places that I might have last left it. Nope. For some reason, it got put on practically underneath the dining table. It was on one of the chairs in our dining room. And it had kind of rolled to where, even walking by, it wasn't visible on the seat. It was kind of under the table, the portion of the chair that was under the table. And the only reason I found it was something fell and I had to move those chairs to reach it. And I'm like, oh, look, here's my knitting bag. I probably wouldn't have, because we don't eat in the dining room and I rarely have to move any of those chairs. I probably wouldn't have found it for a year if that hadn't happened. So it was providence. I was meant to find my knitting so I could finish my socks. So I just have the cuffs to do. Last night I finished knitting up the leg to the length so that both the length of leg matched on both socks. So now I'm working on the cuffs and I hope to have those finished this weekend to take some pictures, because it's supposed to be very nice and mild 80s here, sunny, very nice weather. I will probably be taking the girls to the pool because it's not that hot, sticky, sitting by the pool, just feeling like you're melting kind of weather. Yeah. And I mean, usually I'll take a dip if I'm that hot, but yeah, it's just not comfortable. Because I tend to go to the pool, not necessarily to swim, but because the girls are old enough now to go in the pool by themselves, I can sit and knit and listen to podcasts or a book or read or, you know, or do what I want poolside. But not when it's so hot and sticky out like it's been 90s and just high humidity and bleh, I don't like that. So hopefully it'll be very nice this weekend. It's supposed to be. So I'm almost done with those socks, and they're just, I've said it before, this Madeline Tosh sock, I know now why. It's another yarn that everybody talks about, everybody raves over, people, you know, hoard skeins and skeins of this stuff in colorways because they update their colorways like every 18 months to 2 years. And so people kind of hoard the discontinued colors because they, when they're discontinued, they're pretty much done. So they don't bring them back. So people hoard skeins of their favorites. And now I know why, because it is awesome, beautifully dyed yarn that makes a beautiful fabric. So I love it. I will definitely be buying more. My local yarn shops have a really good selection of Madeline Tosh yarn, but because I had knit with it before, you know, I bought the skein of Tosh sock and copper penny there years ago, and I've maybe got one other skein in like a denim color, a blue denim color, but I don't think I have any more, and I will probably along the way somewhere, I will probably be buying a couple more skeins in other colors. Oh, I think I also have tart. I think that was a color that was gifted to me. I have tart. I didn't buy it. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was gifted to me. Anyway, highly, highly recommend if you knit socks or you're looking at knitting a shawl or something, the Tosh sock yarn is just beautiful to knit with. And the colors, you can't go wrong with any of them. I mean, you just can't. You can't go wrong. Unless it's not your color. If you're knitting it in a shawl, it's going to be up by your face. Pick the color that you know works for you and you will not go wrong. It's great. So during the week that I was off, I got quite a bit of art journaling in. I worked on a class that I had purchased quite a while ago from Kelly Ray. It's either Roberts or Robertson. I think it's Kelly Ray Roberts. And hers is a mixed media class. It's online. It's good. It was a good one. I kind of feel it was more of a beginner mixed media class. So a lot of her techniques I've seen before and done before. What I really enjoyed in her class is her style of drawing. And she's a little bit more mystical, woo-woo-ish in terms of, you know, you do meditation exercises before you start your art. I'm not really all into that. To be honest, if I'm going to meditate or sit and think, like I like to do it if I take a yoga class, I thoroughly enjoy that. Although I will admit at the end of almost every yoga class that I've taken, I fall asleep. Let me tell you, if you're meditating or you're sitting in a relaxed laying down pose for more than 5 minutes, more than likely I'm going to doze off. I doze off in the dentist chair. I doze off during a massage. I'm a mom. Moms catch sleep wherever they can. Really. Speaking of that, when I went for my CAT scan, I've never had one before, and they said it would take 20 minutes. So I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to lay in this tube, and I can catch a nap. Look, y'all, 20 minutes is a nap to me. 20 minutes in a laying down position, eyes closed, that's called a nap. So I've said it before, I love napping. So I go in and I'm like all ready for my nap mentally. Like, I'm like, okay, you know, you've got to keep your blood pressure at a certain, you know, you've got to keep it calm. They're going to use, nitroglycerin, I think. And they use something else in an IV to bring my heart rate down. They had to bring it way down. So anyway, I'm like, that is like the perfect place to try and catch some Z's. Well, I mentioned this to the nurse and the doctor as they're kind of hooking me in and chatting with me. I'm laying there and monitoring me and all that. And they both looked at me and said, oh no, you have to stay awake and semi-alert because you have to follow the directions of breathing. And I'm like, say what? Like, what do you mean? I'm like, oh, I'm like, you have just like ruined this for me. And it turns out the doctor who was the one, you know, monitoring me through this, she is the mom of 4-year-old twins. So she and I were laughing because she totally understood what I meant. She was like, oh yeah, I can, you know, I totally understand. Like 20 minutes is definitely, laying down is definitely a nap, but I'm sorry, you can't do that. She's like, I really hate to disappoint moms. She said, I can always tell the moms that I get in here because they're the ones who are like, man, this is great. I can take a nap. Nobody's bothering me. Nope, not the case. Not the case. You have to follow directions even while you're doing that. Anyway, it was fine. It was all fine. What was I saying? How did I even get on that tangent? I don't need... Oh, goodness gracious. I'm sorry. Totally got on a tangent there. So... During my vacation, I was able to get several classes. I caught up on a couple craftsy classes. I watched the knife cutting one that Sandy from Quilting for the Rest of Us had mentioned quite a while ago. That was a very good class. Very, very good class. I watched... one on fabric painting, which was okay. Again, I think it was another class definitely for beginners. And because I've done fabric painting quite a few times, there were a couple of techniques. The other one that I really enjoyed, oh, and of course I'm drawing a blank now to her name, was Debbie Caffrey, The Clever Cuts for Efficient Quilting, and her other class. I watched the Clever Cuts one. Very, very good. Highly recommend. That was another one that I'd heard Sandy talk about and recommend. And I really did like that one. It was a great refresher because it's been a while since I cut for a quilt, a full big quilt. But just really good tips, general safety tips to remind you of, you know, sometimes, you know, we kind of have to remember, just because we might have been doing something for a long time and we think we know it, it doesn't mean that we don't need refresher. We don't need a refresher or a reminder of safety tips and just general stuff. So it was really good. And just her general instruction and her teaching style were very good. And the layout, the way the class was laid out, I also enjoyed that. And then I also watched the Fit to Flatter with Amy Herzog knitting. Oh my gosh. I finished that because I'm pretty sure I've mentioned it before on this podcast. How much I enjoy Amy Herzog's book on fit and basically making sure your knitting and clothes fit you well and you look better in your clothes. And that's really what I love about Amy's both video course and her books. She just has a natural way of making you feel very comfortable no matter what your size is, in fitting garments or wearing garments. She just has a very comfortable teaching style and just way about her that just comes across so well on the screen. I think, you know, that's obviously why she's such a popular and in-demand teacher. Because many times on the knitting podcasts that I listen to or watch, when they talk about her, if they've taken a class with her from Vogue Knitting Live or Stitches, any of the Stitches conferences and conventions that they have for knitting and fiber arts, everyone always says that she's just so down to earth, and it doesn't matter what size you are. You could go in being intimidated because you think, oh, you know, knit to fit, it's going to be like size 2 and 4 and very small petite women. She will go whatever size you are. They all say anybody can come up and she will show them exactly how to properly and correctly fit clothes and knitting in specifically to your body shape and what silhouettes look best for your shape and how you can make adjustments in the clothes you you're wearing or the things you're knitting or just your standard knitting sweater pattern, how you can make the right adjustments so that it fits you better. And so you're not wasting your time knitting this whole garment that can take months to make. And at the end, it's just either makes you look like a big, you know, frump because it's so bulky and baggy and it just doesn't fit well, or it's too tight in the arms and, you know, you're just very frustrated because you just spent all this time and effort and money on a garment that you will never wear. And she's very, very adamant. It's not, what I liked is she doesn't spend a whole lot of time on the technique. You know, it's not about teaching you how to knit and or how to do, you know, purl two and a yarn over and those kinds of things. It's how to use certain stitches to get the effect that you need in your garment. So if there's, for example, a sweater pattern that's just a plain sweater pattern that might make you look too boxy, she shows you how to put bust darts in it or do waist, what's called waist shaping, to give it some shape to fit your body better. And very, very concise, very easy to follow, take your time, simple ways. And what's really funny is I really got into this more because I'm getting closer and closer to my goal of knitting a sweater for myself. You know, I first tackled making socks and now I'm basically almost done with my second pair of socks. So I'm very happy about that. And so now I want to knit a sweater for myself, but I'm not a small woman and I also have, you know, an ample chest. So I know that I have fit issues that I need to work with in a pattern that I might pick. And I certainly, because I'm a slow knitter and I know this will take me a long time, I certainly don't want to get to the end of it and feel like I have just completely wasted my time. But the plus about this is that you don't, I know most of the people who would buy her class or watch her class would do it because, would look at it because they're knitters. But honestly, I think if you sew garments, you need to watch her class. If you are bored or tired of your wardrobe, or if you struggle, like if you're not a clothes type person, yet you want to look a little bit more fashionable, you know, and you need some direction that you've maybe never received or really paid attention to in getting garments to fit you better, I highly, highly recommend watching this class. She just does such a good job. That instruction alone to me was worth, I think I got it on sale for $24.99. I think I may have missed it at the $19.99. But in my opinion, the information she gives is well worth the $25. I mean, what was really funny too is as I was purging my closet, I had already watched this class and I'd finished washing it. I mean, which basically meant that I had to go back and watch stuff that I'd watched 6 months ago. So I had to rewatch most of the class. It made it so much easier than when I went to my closet to purge stuff. Even some tops that I do still like, it was so much easier for me to say, this does not look good on me. Like, even though I like it, even though I may have paid a little bit more money than I would probably want to spend on a top, it doesn't fit me well. There's a reason I never wear it. It's got to go. And it was so much easier for me to say that. And then when I was on my vacation week, can you tell I love that vacation week? I've mentioned it how many times now. I did a little personal shopping for myself because it's been a while since I bought some tops for myself. And I went and I bought a couple tops and I went into the dressing room and it was so easy for me to go, nope, nope, yeah, nope, not, doesn't look good. Whereas before I might have tried to talk myself into it just to get it over with. And I do like to shop in general, but yeah, it just helped pare it down. It it was really, really good information that I needed to, a lot of it that I needed to be reminded of, and to be reminded that it doesn't matter. Again, it doesn't matter what size you are. You should be wearing clothes that you feel good in, that look good on you, that fit you well, and that you're worth that. You're worth more than just having to wear a boxy t-shirt every day because you think that's the only thing that would look good on you or that you can wear. You're worth more than that. So, yeah. Anyway, highly enjoyed that class. I will post a link to that specific class. The several classes that I've already mentioned, I will post links on to the Craftsy classes I've talked about. So other than that, that's pretty much what I've been doing. Recently, I did get back to working on my 80s quilt that I mentioned a long time ago. You guys know me. I have all these ideas in my head. I'll let them out there and then it's like crickets. But the 80s quilt is going to happen. It is. It's just something that I put on the back burner because there's so much other stuff I had going on. But I was able to pull it back out, pull out all the moving parts, and I'm reworking some of it. And Electric Quilt and I are friends again on my new computer. We are now friends again because we were having a tough time of it in our relationship for quite a while there. But we've worked things out and we're playing nice again. And yeah, I mean, to the point where we had to get counseling from EQ online and over the phone to work out our differences. And even the technician who helped me on from EQ was kind of like, boy, I haven't run into this issue before. And it was kind of funny. We had legitimate relationship issues, EQ and I. So that's what's been going on. I briefly wanted to mention creative planning. Because that's another thing that I've posted pictures of on Instagram. I'm Crafty Garden Mom on Instagram. I would love it if you follow me and I will follow you back. I have always been a paper planner. I shouldn't say always. I have tried brief stints at the all electronic or my iPhone. I remember, and I had a Palm, I had a BlackBerry long ago. None of them stuck in terms of keeping my appointments and my to-do lists in there, my grocery lists, everything. I need to write it down for it to stick in my brain and my subconscious, and I need to see it in print. And that I've just come to that conclusion over many years of brief tries on the electronic bandwagon. I'm a paper girl. And recently I've noticed that creative people are also kind of going back to paper planning. Or maybe it's just me and I've noticed a resurgence in it. Because it was kind of for years there, it was kind of like the Franklin planner, Mead, which you could get at the drugstore, at Target or Walmart. Franklin planner was probably the one that's most well known because they had the Franklin Covey stores all over the country for a long time there. But yeah, I took the Franklin planner course, all of that. But it just seems to me that creative people that I follow on Instagram and some blogs have all of a sudden in the last couple months been posting pictures of their planner pages, their week, and how they are using their artsy side to jazz up their planners. And I just, it's funny because over the years I have like doodled in my planner. I have used stickers or something to kind of, but just kind of small stuff. But it's kind of cool to, first of all, use up some of my scrapbooking supplies. Because I haven't gone out and bought a whole lot of stuff, but I have used some of my mixed media stamps and things to kind of jazz up my pages and just to bring some creativity. And sometimes in a week, that's the only place I have because I'm already writing in there. I'm already writing my appointments in there. So to add a few doodles or sketches in my planner it's just kind of satisfying. It allows me in a very busy week or busy day where I know I'm not going to have time to sit down and be really creative, whether it's sewing or art journaling or knitting, just to do a quick doodle in my planner is satisfying. It's helpful in fulfilling that little need or niggle that I have to do something creative. So I can see why it's becoming popular. And a lot of YouTube videos are out there on this. If you look at the hashtag on Instagram, Planner Girl or Planner Love or Planner Nerd, you will see hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pictures of people's creativity in their planners. So as I get the notion to do so, I will post more pictures of that, but I did want to mention it. And if you are coming back to your paper planner, or you've also always been a paper kind of person, I encourage you to check some of that out. Now, I will say, between you and me, some of them are so filled with stickers and just tabs and like all kinds of stuff that I wonder where they actually fit the content. I try and actually write all of my appointments and things that I know are kind of set in stone, so to speak, in my week before I do any decorating, because yes, it's all well and good to get creative in your planner, but some of them, to be honest, it looks a little like they're doing it more for the cutesiness of their planner pages versus the actual usefulness of their planner pages. Maybe that's just my opinion. That's just me looking at it. If, you know, when it's all said and done, if it's working for you, it's working for you and it's your planner, you do whatever you want. You can decorate as much as you want, of course. But in terms of what I would do, I'm probably a happy medium where I still want to make sure that it is useful to me to be carrying this thing around because it actually holds the information that I need to plan out my day, my week, my month, my year. And it's not just taking up space in my handbag or my tote bag, but it is a fun place to do a little decorating, a little just fun to your day. And it is kind of cool. I have just some found creative objects that I have laminated and I keep in my planner. I have the girls' pictures in my planner, you know, and there really hadn't been a place other than my desk at work that I like. I've never been one to carry pictures around in my wallet. Yeah, I just never really did that. But now we carry them around in our phone too. We don't need it. But since I open up my planner every day, several times a day, it's kind of nice just to see the girls' faces there every time I open it. So, because even in your pictures, unless it's your home screen page, you don't necessarily scroll through all the photos that you have in your, you know, that photo folder. So anyway, it's I'm enjoying having that be a little creative, a new little creative outlet for me. And I know some of you are as well. So before I talk about a classic movie and books, I did want to make sure I mentioned that Sandy from Quilting for the Rest of Us podcast and blog and I will once again be doing the Banned Books Week mini quilt challenge. We are so thankful for those of you who are repeaters. If you are new to this, I will post a link to the original blog post I did on this, which has the guidelines, which are pretty simple. Make a mini quilt based on a banned or challenged book. And you can go to bannedbooks.org to see the whole list of the banned and challenged books over the years. There have been many. Some may surprise you. But Sandy and I, for the last several years, have teamed up and we enjoy doing this challenge. Banned Books Week is September 27th through October 3rd. So that's basically when your deadline is to get your mini quilt finished and in the Flickr group for the prizes. Sandy usually offers one prize and I usually offer one prize. And I haven't finalized what my prize is, but I'm thinking it's going to be pretty good. More than likely, it will be fabric shop related, online fabric shop related. We will see. Anyway, there are prizes. Let's just put it that way. And you can check my blog out at the show notes. I will put, like I said, a link to the original post about Banned Books Week, the challenge. And I know Sandy, if she has not already, when she records or does a blog post about it, you can check out her information about this too. But just basically for right now, if you're going to work on it, set the week of September 27th to October 3rd as the deadline to complete your quilt. So start designing, start thinking of ideas, pick a book, and start, you know, getting creative with your mini quilt. And I know that I so look forward to seeing what you all come up with. We are going to keep it as a perpetual Flickr group where we just, every year, people just continue to add their quilts to the same group. However, the eligibility for a prize this year is always the new pictures that are added in 2015. So previous old pictures are there for the quilt eye candy and the creative eye candy that they are for people just to come and look at and ooh and ah over. All of the new pictures that are added for the challenge this year are the ones that are prize eligible. Okay. And then briefly, I did want to give an update on my garden. I have talked about my lasagna garden and the bounty has been plentiful. I have got zucchini and summer squash coming out the wazoo. I only planted one of each, one zucchini plant and one summer squash plant. And I think from each, I have probably already got 2.5 to 3 dozen, what do you call them? Zucchini stalks, like separate zucchini and summer squash from each. They loved the lasagna garden. These plants loved it. The peppers are just now coming in and ripening to their color. They're getting the, I planted green, red, and orange peppers, as well as some of the spicier, longer peppers. Those are now turning red and I'll have some good salsa, and I don't know if they're big enough really to become stuffed peppers, but anyway, I bought a zoodle maker to make noodles out of the zucchini, and those, you know, all of that is going on. And my mom reminded me that you can freeze zucchini as well, so I'll freeze it, but I've been bringing several stalks in a couple times a week to work, and people are like, just so excited to see fresh from the garden summer squash and zucchini, and it's very good. So very happy with the zucchini. The spinach and the lettuce that I'd had earlier bolted. I don't think I mentioned that, but yeah, it didn't work out. I think I was away for work or something for a couple days, and when I came back, it had bolted. So yeah, which basically means if you're not familiar with that term in garden, it just means it went bad. It dried up and died up. And that happens if it's too cold or it's extreme change in climate or the weather, it will bolt. And that happened to both the spinach and the lettuce. But we're coming up on the season where you can plant lettuce and spinach again as the summer winds down into August and September here. You can usually get a second crop, and same with the broccoli. So I'm going to clear out some of that space actually this weekend, since it's, like I said, not going to be super hot and humid. I'm going to clear out some of that old space and try again. Yeah, and actually broccoli, I have to check and see if I have enough room to do some broccoli, because that spreads out pretty well. And I know just from the soil content and how well some of my other plants are doing, I'm hoping the broccoli will do well, but I have to make sure I have enough space. Anyway, yeah. And then herbs and stuff like that have been doing fine. But yeah, that's been the lasagna garden. It wasn't very big. I didn't do a whole lot. I did not do tomatoes this year. I might do some tomatoes next year. We'll see. We'll see. I do have plenty of room to lengthen the garden and make it, you know, so I could plant more plants. This year I kept it rather small, and I'm kind of glad I did because I don't spend as much time out there as I thought I would. It just gets too hot or too many mosquitoes, and I'm just like, I just go out there and pick what I planted earlier versus try and plant more. So the classic movie that I wanted to mention that I recently watched after, it's probably been at least 20 or so years. I think the last time I saw this movie, I was in college, and this year was my 20-year anniversary from graduating college. The movie is called My Six Loves with Debbie Reynolds. I'm bringing it up here on IMDb so I make sure I get the other. Yeah, Cliff Robertson is the other well-known actor's name. And this is, here's what happens. I am that nerd, that classic movie nerd who brings up TCM, Turner Classic Movies, or AMC, American Movie Classics channels on her guide, and will scroll through the week and click record on any of the classic movies that I might want to watch. And this one came up several weeks ago and I'd recorded it, and because I got all excited when I saw it, because for a long, long time, I don't think it was ever like put on VCR, and I think it's available now on DVD, but I know for years it was not available in video form. And so when I saw this one, it just like clicked something in my mind how much I loved this movie. And essentially, Debbie Reynolds plays a successful Broadway star named Janice, and she is exhausted. She's been working too much, and so her doctor orders her to rest for 6 weeks at her country home in Connecticut. Already a satisfying movie right there, right? Anyway, while she's there, she learns, because she has not had the time to go out to her country home in Connecticut, and she learns that there are some squatters who are on her land. And these squatters aren't adults. They're six children. And yeah, so that's part of where you might think in the title, My Six Loves, it's about a woman, you know, with six loves. No, the six loves actually turn out to be the children. And it's really a heartwarming, fun story. All of the actors and actresses, both adults and children, are delightful. Some of them are pretty well known. If you watch a lot of classic movies, you'll recognize them. But the dialogue is great. Some of the music, the tunes are great. It is Debbie Reynolds. She does sing well. The costuming is great. This is an early 60s movie. I think it was made in 62 or 63. I'm looking here. Yes, IMDb says it's 1963. So that early 60s fashion, and Debbie Reynolds, of course, is fashionably dressed and looks fabulous. There's a scene where she's wearing this white summer dress with a white pillbox hat that, I swear, only women in the 60s and earlier could pull this off. Like, these are truly hats that have had their time. And unless you are on stage or are truly going for a vintage vibe that you, I think, have to have a certain personality and look to pull off today, they belong to that time, and that's where they belong, in my opinion. And this outfit that she has on is so classic to that time. It's fabulous. Very Mad Men-ish. But Debbie Reynolds just does it just beautifully. And but the story itself is really heartwarming. It's definitely a family-friendly movie. Actually, it's something I saved because I want Sam to watch it too. I think she'll get a kick out of the kids. And it's basically about, you know, Janice reassessing her life and reassessing what success means, and discovering love and what really makes her happy, and how you can have it all, but it can mean something completely different from what it meant to you before. And it's very heartwarming. Debbie Reynolds, of course, is delightful, and so are the other characters. And I really, really recommend this. Now, I saw this on TCM. I have not seen it back on the schedule. I think it's probably one that they pop in as a surprise. And unless you're a movie nerd like me, a classic movie nerd like me, you may have missed it. But if you are an Amazon Prime member, you can watch it for free on Amazon Prime streaming. And I have not had a chance to check if Netflix has it, but I do recommend this. If you do have Amazon Prime and you like to watch streaming movies, this is definitely one you should check out. So that's My Six Loves with Debbie Reynolds. And the books. I'm running long on time, so I'm going to mention two of the books that I recommend for the summer. Both of them are pretty literary, but I know a lot of you enjoy a good literary read. And I only mention that because lately, if you look in my Goodreads folder, you'll see I've read a lot of, let's just say, erotica. Some of my more sexy smexy books have been in my queue lately. But Circling the Sun by Paula McLean is an advance read that I was fortunate enough to get quite a few months ago. And I've been sitting on this review and suggestion to you because I don't like to mention books months and months before you're able to read them too. But this one comes out on Tuesday, July 28th, and I highly, highly recommend this book. Whether or not you liked The Paris Wife, and I will tell you, it wasn't one of my favorite books. It was one of those that I really, really wanted to like because it was so talked up in the media. You know, every book club was reading it. It was a big bestseller, and based on her writing style, it deserved it. It was well deserving of the praise and acclaim and notoriety and love that it got. My problem with The Paris Wife was mainly with the wife. The main character, just in a nutshell, because that is not the book I'm reviewing, but she just annoyed me to so much that, and her just passiveness with Ernest Hemingway just so irked me that it was very difficult for me to like her, and it just carried me through the book. Anyway, Circling the Sun is very different. It is the story of Beryl Markham, who was an amazing and strong-willed woman. She was raised in Kenya, and with her father, they were basically in colonial Kenya, where they were British, and they came to Kenya, and she came to Kenya at a very young age. And was left there by her mother, who wanted to go back to England. She didn't like Kenya. Her father, though, loved the land, loved the people, he wanted to stay in Kenya. He lived there. And Beryl didn't really have a choice, but she loved the land and loved Kenya as well. So that's where she grew up with her father. And this is a true story, or excuse me. I take it back. This is a work of fiction based on a real person. So Beryl became a well-respected horse trainer. Her father was very well known and very good with horses, and she became one herself. And she became the first female horse trainer in Africa. But she struggled for respect in the field. It was, of course, a very male-dominated field, and she fought against the odds of being an independent woman. She didn't want to get married. She recognized the disparity between the sexes, And so she struggled for respect and a place in this land she loved. The writing and the description of an untouched Kenya previous, you know, prior to there being safaris and just hundreds and hundreds or thousands of tourists going through, Paula McLean does an amazing job of describing it. You literally feel like you have dropped right into this land. And the love that Beryl has for this land is so evident in this book. And the descriptions are just beautiful. And I'm one of those people who, if the author goes on and on for pages and pages about, you know, describing something, it starts to annoy me. But Paula McLean has a way of doing just enough. Like, you get just enough of it that you savor it and just enjoy it, but it doesn't go on and on. She keeps the story moving. Where it could get a little slow or dreary, she keeps it moving to where you're not really bored. And of course, there's, you know, the loves of Beryl's life and the heartache and the other people in her life, and some of the heartache that she has and things she has to go through. She goes back to England and, you know, she realizes very much that her home is in Kenya and she no longer has any real affiliation with the land of her birth in England. She doesn't fit in there at all. It's so well done. And then later in the book, what Beryl is probably more well known for is being one of the first female aviators. And she's one, I want to say she's the first woman to do a transatlantic flight. I may have that. I know she's a record-setting aviator. Yes. So, and she has, there's a love triangle that is mentioned, and it's put in the memoir Out of Africa. So, like, there's just all kinds of things historically in this book that Paula McLean weaves into the story that she just does so, so well. I was very fortunate several months ago to be invited to a dinner with Paula McLean, so I got to pick her brain with several others. And what was amazing to me, if you do pick up this book to read, just know that she wrote the book before she ever visited Kenya. Like, and I'm not saying you have to visit the place you write about, but reading this book, there is no way you would have been able, if before I met her, you would have been able to tell me she'd never seen this place. And yeah, she wrote it. And yeah, it was just amazing. She met the descendants of Beryl Markham. She talked with them. She saw exact places she lived, places that had been mentioned in out of the book and movie Out of Africa. So she really did. And this was all after writing the book and doing her editing in the editing process. But just amazing. She's a wonderful lady. Part of my review might be a little biased towards her because I really enjoyed her as a person. And I didn't, in our meeting, mention that I didn't enjoy The Paris Wife. Our discussion was mainly about her new book, Circling the Sun, and books in general. She is also a well-read person, and we talked just about all different kinds of books. So that is Circling the Sun by Paula McLean. The other book I wanted to briefly mention is one that I also read as an advance, and I almost forgot to, I don't think I even put this in Goodreads because I read it at work, basically. And I got so absorbed in it that I think I read it in like 2 days at work. And it is The Flying Circus by Susan Crandall. And this one just came out, I think July 7th or 8th, the beginning of this month. And this one is also set in the early 20th century, 1920s. And you may have heard of flying circuses where it's the, you know, early days of aviation. people are, oh, you can probably hear my phone in the background. Sorry about that. The early days, you know, when they flew the planes where you were out in the air, there was no cover. And like kind of the Wright brothers kinds of planes. Well, in the roaring 20s, there were flying circuses. This is how, you know, companies made extra money with aviation. And it's, you know, again, early days of aviation. So it's this, you know, Charles Lindbergh days. But in these flying circuses, they would get people, you know, who were basically daredevils to do all kinds of stunts and tricks. And I mean, you learn a little bit of them going up in planes that literally had not been working hours before. And the mechanic is like, I think she'll be all right. And the aviator's like, okay, well, the pilot is, that sounds good to me. And they just go up. But they would also recruit women to do stunts, like acrobatic stunts in the air, hanging from these planes. So the story is about three people from very different backgrounds. There's Henry, who is the son of German immigrants from Midwestern farm country. There's Cora. She is, she comes from privilege, yet her family has lost their fortune. So she has to go and make money, but she has some kind of, you know, she's wanting to make money on her own to help her family, but she doesn't want, you know, she's basically like, we're not going to be what we were before, Mom. I can't save the entire family fortune here. It's already gone. So she goes out to be a woman of independent means and to earn some money. And there's, she's very aware of the few choices women have to do this at this time. And then there's Charles Gill, who is a World War I veteran. He was a pilot. And so he's a pilot in this flying circus. And they become friends. Each of them has a secret. And if they reveal their secret, it will destroy their friendship. But the book is about their journey and the adventure and this time period. And just everything from like bootlegging is in here to air racing. And again, just, and they're going across, basically these flying circuses would go places across the prairie and, you know, cause they needed a lot of open space and places like basically farms where they had acres and acres and acres of length for these planes to be able to go down. So a lot of people who lived in the Midwest, this was entertainment for them. You know, it was a circus basically that would come to town, and instead of it being on the ground, they were looking up in the air. And it was just a time before the Depression, so people were not depressed. They had maybe a little money to spend, and they wanted, you know, it was the roaring 20s, and people just had a sense of enlivenment. They had come out of a war, and while they were depressed about, you know, that and the veterans that were coming back and the loss of the people wanted, you know, livelihood and entertainment during this time. And I always find it interesting to read these kinds of books because knowing what happens next in history is kind of bittersweet, you know? Anyway, it's called The Flying Circus by Susan Crandall, C-R-A-N-D-A-L-L. And this was another really good read. You know, I like my period, that 20s period read. But this was another one I enjoyed, and I think you will too. And that's about it. I think that's enough. So, for show notes, visit my blog at craftygardenmom.com. On Twitter and Instagram, I am Crafty Garden Mom. On Ravelry and Pinterest, I'm Tanisha, Tanisha N. And Goodreads, I'm also Tanisha. You can find me at any of those places. You can also email me at TanishaQuilts@yahoo.com. I will talk to you all soon. Take care. Bye-bye.